Possible in part by a grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. 352-5700. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, and they encourage you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic, with offices in Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, and Mahomet, providing quality health care to the residents of Central Illinois. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, The Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us this morning. We're also pleased to welcome back the man that we like to call our chef in residence. Now, I'd just like to point something out here, ladies and gentlemen. It's a purely honorary title.
Yes, but everybody knows
it. And for a long time now, this guy, Doyle Moore, has been stopping by the first Wednesday of the month, and we talk about cooking, and we always have a good time when he's here. As I have said before on the program, generally speaking in the morning, I'm in a bad mood. I'm not a morning guy. I'm not happy to be here. But after talking with Doyle, I always feel better. We pick out a particular topic, and when I say we, I mean he picks out a particular topic, and then we talk about that thing. And we've talked about different dishes. We've talked about cooking from different places. And we say to people, you know, call in and tell us if you have a recipe you'd like to share. That would be great. Maybe you have some kind of story that you'd like to share, because food and family history are invariably associated. So any and all of that, we've even done a little bit of culinary troubleshooting. People have called in and said, look, I have this recipe I'm trying to make, and I'm having a problem. It's just not turning out. What do you think I'm doing wrong? We have done a little bit of that, too. So any and all of that, it's not, there are no real rules for the program other than we just try to have a good time with the topic. So this time around, Doyle's thought was we might talk about corn. And it is indeed the time when people look forward to. I know there are a lot of people look forward to all year long when they can go to, and generally I guess people probably go to farmers markets, or maybe there are other places they can go and get sweet corn. Stuff that's just as fresh out of the field as you could possibly have it. And a lot of people, I'm sure, would just prepare that in the simplest possible way, and they'll eat it off the cob, which is a great experience, one of the great summer experiences. But there are a lot of other things that you can do with corn other than just plain old having it on, eating it off the cob. So we're saying this morning, well, let's talk about all the things you can do with it. Maybe you have a good corn recipe that you could share with us, or you just want to say hi. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Glad to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Before we do this, do you want to talk about the other?
Oh, well, yes. Thing? As I said, we have some unfinished business. On our last show, a listener called in. It wasn't about the subject of our show, but he was in dire need of a Belgian recipe called waterzooi. Mm-hmm. waterzooi. And I didn't have any information at the moment, but a listener sent me two recipes. And so if that person is listening today, and I'm sure he is, call in and your recipes are waiting for you.
Okay. And if you would drop us a postcard or a note or an email or something, we'll send them to you. And yes. I guess anybody else who would like to have the recipe, we have it, so we can make a copy and
indeed
send it on to
indeed
you. Okay.
So that's how far we go to get this done.
So, corn.
Corn.
Again, as I say, I'm sure that lots and lots of folks, it is one of the things you associate with summer. It's a limited kind of a thing. It's really good for a while, and you want to eat it and eat it. And then it's just gone, and you say, well, okay, we can live until next summer.
Well, yes, and there are a lot of memories that I have with corn in different forms other than those few weeks that you would have the corn. I know that we always somehow managed to have three or four rows of corn, and so we had the benefits of that, and that was about all there was to it. We often had a little garden in the back somewhere. But then they're the corn in the market when I grew up wasn't. You didn't go to the farmer's market. There wasn't such a thing. Mm. And so you depended on friends or your own little three or four rows of corn, which never really produced a lot. So corn was wonderful, but for a very, very short period of time. And you didn't extend it beyond that. However, some very bright and enterprising peoples who wanted to preserve the eating of corn a little bit longer than that, and this is one of my old family recipes, and I get very sentimental about it because it's so totally different from any other experience, and that is dried corn. Have you ever had dried corn? It's mm-mm. It's very specifically Pennsylvania Dutch. It is just absolutely, that's it. I mean, you can't say dried corn and leave out the word Pennsylvania Dutch. Now, other people I do know preserve corn and preserve other things by drying. But this one seems to be quite special. And it's a little harder to make than you think that you want to spend the time. But, oh, the result is absolutely wonderful. I do not know where Mother ever got it. I don't ever remember watching her make it from scratch, from corn. But she often had it. But then she had ways of finding and getting things that I had no idea. And I had some dried corn up until not too long ago, and now I want some more. But I'm going to have to make it myself. And it is made relatively simple, except it takes a long time. I've pondered whether I would dry it drying rack. What am I trying to say? Dehydrator.
Well, you have one of those things you go out and buy for
yes.
just that very
However,
purpose,
the yeah. The folk recipe uses just a 200-degree oven. And what you do is you cut the corn off of the cobs, and then you turn the knife over, you know, and use the back and scrape out all the milk and juice and all that other stuff, and then that is mixed up with, of all things, sugar, about 16 cups of corn and a cup and a half of sugar, and then some cream. And then that is very slowly cooked, very, very slowly cooked, until all of the liquid disappears. And then that's spread onto sheets, cookie sheets-like, and then dried in an oven for anywhere between 18 and 24 hours, a long time. And I find it amusing that the recipe says, at night, take it out. Don't cook it overnight. And I think it's in order to not burn it or to not dry it too fast or to, you know, to ruin it. So you want to watch it because you want to stir it every 2 or 3 hours. And it dries up and dehydrates. And then it's put away. And it's dry, so it would work quite fine. The one recipe that I located says to freeze it. Mm-hmm. But I even freeze dried tomatoes, sun-dried tomatoes. I will freeze those because I know that they're safer off than not. Then when you want to reconstitute it, you soak it in water, and so a half a cup of dried corn per person, and then you cover that with water and let it soak for 4 hours, and it reconstitutes itself, and you don't put anything else with it. I mean, drain the water off, simply heat it, a little butter, salt, and pepper, and that's it. But the sugar and the cream and the concentrated drying change the flavor to something that is absolutely just exotic. and it isn't the same thing as eating the fresh corn off the cob, which is another experience. But this you think, like, you know, how could people be so bright to actually make this and have it around? But Pennsylvania Dutch dried corn. Now I know you can buy it dried already. I have seen it in a store or two, I think. I'm not sure, but it seems to me like may have even found it at something like Cracker Barrel. Hmm. There may be some corn, but again, it's over in their Pennsylvania Dutch area. But that is something that I think is pretty wonderful to deal with.
So this was just a method of preserving it so that you could keep it.
It was to dry it to keep it, yeah. That's what I say, because that time period used to be very, very short for corn and very limited. So you wanted something that you could extend out and have a little bit longer. Yeah. That's where it came from.
Well, I could see how that would work because there are so many other things, fruits and tomatoes and things, the things that when you dry them, what happens is the flavor
concentrates
and intensifies.
Boy.
So
yes,
you get it even more packed into the smaller. That's why sun-dried tomatoes are such a great item.
That's true. But it's one that is pretty rarefied. But I wanted to start with a very rarefied recipe this morning.
This is the first Wednesday of the month, and we, for a long time now, have been talking about food and cooking on the first Wednesday, exchanging stories and recipes. And the man here with me is the guy we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. And we're talking about corn. And if you have a recipe to share or anything else you want to talk about that has to do with corn, you can call us, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. You know, something that I've always had wanted to do, and somehow I just have never gotten around to it. I know this is a really simple sort of deal, but whenever we come around to the time when there is sweet corn, I always think, I want to roast it on the grill.
Yes.
And I have never gotten around to doing that.
There's two ways of roasting corn on the grill. One is direct, and one is sort of indirect. And you'll find, now let's see, do I get my country straightened out here? Mexico is a great place to find corn grilled, but they're chopped in little pieces that are about 3 or 4 inches long, and then they are grilled right on top of a grill. Mm-hmm. I mean, like our barbecue.
Like a charcoal.
Charcoal grill.
Yeah.
And the other place that I saw that done was in Greece at sort of county fair kind of thing or carnival sort of thing. I was very surprised to find corn there because corn is a New World product, except it got into Europe and into China and all, 16th century. It's been there at least that long with the Portuguese carrying it back and forth. And I was sort of surprised because I keep saying, that's our food. You know, it belongs here in Mexico and America. But the other technique, and this is one that is done by a lot of people, is that you peel the husks down. You don't rip them off. Peel them down and then soak the corn with the husks peeled back or revealed. Soak it in ice water. And then you pull that back up and tie something around it so that it's all. And then you put that on the grill, but you cook that until the husks are black and fall off. Mm-hmm. And then the corn isn't really hurt, and the husks then all fall off, and that's a little bit different taste. It's kind of smoky, and it's tender and tasty. I know that my folks in Cheyenne cook it that way.
So in one case it's more direct. You get and the other case it's all, almost like it's steamed.
Sort of steam smoked, and the kernels aren't bothered in any way. The other way, they want to be a little bit black, and you turn them and roll them.
So you get a little charring, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Does in that case, does it get you get a little bit more caramelization if you do it in the direct way?
Yes, indeed. But nothing is put on it. You don't put any butter on it until you take it off. Saw a curious addition. Lime juice, chili powder. Let's see, lime juice, chili powder, and olive oil was made up into a little paste, and then that's put on it instead of butter and salt and pepper.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me. Well, maybe this year I'm just going to have to try it.
Well, you got to do it.
Tell Mrs. Inge to bring some extra, and we'll fire up the Barbie and see what we can do. We have someone in Iroquois County to talk with. Let's do that on our line number 4. Hello.
Hello. You were talking about dried corn.
Yes.
And I just wanted to tell you that I still have a small amount of dried corn in a pint jar.
Yes.
That my grandmother gave me in 1964.
Yes.
And I'm treasuring it. And, in fact, I had to share it a little with my sister and brother. But we have a small amount left, and each year I just take a little bit and taste it, and it still tastes great.
Isn't it a wonderful taste?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of
shriveled up and brown.
It's shriveled up and brown, looks like grape nuts.
Mm-hmm. And yes, it does.
Yep. Huh? Learn how to make it yourself.
Well, I actually have the recipe myself.
You do.
But,
is it like the one I described with milk and
yes.
and cooking it down and then
I just caught the end of what you were saying, so I'm not sure if it's the same or not. But it's something about on the stove first and then spread out
yes.
cookie sheets.
That's right.
In the oven.
And
overnight, real low for long time.
18 to 24 hours, yeah.
But she actually did it outdoors in the sun.
I think
covered up with
cheesecloth. Yes, keep
yes.
the flies off it because there's sugar.
On the roof of the chicken house.
Oh, my. Isn't that wonderful?
And I just thought I'd add that to your...
Well, I'm so glad you appreciate that particular taste because it is... And I empathize with you about... Oh, just take a little bit. You know, I almost don't want to serve it because it's so rare,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of want to just have a little bit. But it's so special.
It is.
But it is a different taste, isn't it?
Yes. So, I didn't catch. Have you made it? Is that?
I was describing how you make it. It is cooked on the top of the
okay.
stove.
But you've not made it yourself, is that correct?
Yes.
Oh, you have?
I have, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, because then, and I was laughing because I kept mine in the same jar that my mother gave me some time ago. I was sort of laughing at you. And saying, well, I know exactly where it is and what it looks like and how. But yes, with half and half and sugar, and you cook it for... a little bit until it all dries out. I mean, until all of the liquid is gone. Then is when you turn it out onto the pans,
mm-hmm.
and then stir it every 2 or 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
so it doesn't stick. Well,
how long did it take for it to dry enough to put away?
About 18 hours.
Okay.
It's not a full 24, but around 18 hours it'll be done and. Just take it out of the oven at night and put it back in the next morning.
Ah.
But I was pondering on that this morning, thinking about this. I thought, you know, they didn't have 200 degree ovens in Pennsylvania in 1819 when mm-hmm. my great grandfather was born there. He didn't have that. They put it outside and dried it.
Uh-huh.
That's why it's called dried.
Uh-huh. Well, it was great hearing you talk about it.
It is fun. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call. Well, just I'm here now on the computer that's
yes.
in front of me. And what I did was I'd into the web browser, just put the word dried corn. And there are a number of places where you can buy it.
Where you can buy it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Where are they? I mean, not specifically, but area?
One of them I know I looked at was in Connecticut. There was a place here that... seem to be somewhere in the, I think in the upper Midwest. Here was a place called the Sisters Farm.
Oh, yes.
Which is in northern Wisconsin. And then there were a couple of other places that sell it. So you could order it, I'm sure, online or over the telephone or what, if you're interested in trying it. Here's another place called... John Cope's Food Products. I think this was the place that said that they were in, this place is in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
I think there also was another place that was in Vermont, so out there out in the Northeast. And there are also a number of recipes here for doing things with it, and some that seem to be like Mexican or Native American, in addition to the kind of Pennsylvania Dutch
thing
that we were talking about. So if you want to try it and you don't want to dry your own, it looks like it is possible to go out and buy buy dried corn.
I think so.
Even good Midwestern dried corn from Wisconsin. How can you go wrong?
You're right.
Next, let's talk with a caller in Aurora, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hello there.
How are you?
Fine.
You sound real great.
I'm happy.
Like everybody ought to be. Wanted to ask a question, and I'm just deviating a little bit, but I have this new granddaughter, and I thought when the weather got hot, I'd make her what I thought was a Latin or Mexican or Puerto Rican recipe.
Yes.
Gazpacho soup.
Oh, great. Yes. I'm making that tomorrow night.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
So categorize it. What country is that from?
Oh, South America, Mexico.
No, I asked
Gazpacho?
All my Latino city bank clerks, and nobody ever heard the word. So then I asked the Puerto Rican bank clerk. She says, I never heard of it. So then I
You must be pronouncing it wrong. That's absolutely a south of the border recipe.
Well, you give me the pronunciation.
Gazpacho. Gazpacho.
Well, it's in my Mexican cookbook. I didn't think my accent was that.
Well, I wouldn't think so either, but something is wrong because it is a very, very common known
That's what
dish.
I thought.
Yes.
That's what I thought. And I thought that it could stand some corn in it. That's what I thought.
No, I wouldn't. I'd keep with the fresh vegetables and
Yeah, I have the recipe right in front of me, and it's just cucumbers and
yes.
green peppers and onions.
And onions and tomatoes.
Yeah, and tomatoes.
And and onions or could be garlic. And then you could add however spicy
they have
peppers that you want or even Tabasco sauce. Or I will tell you, if you promise to keep it a secret, I'll give you my most recent secret additive. I buy V8 hot.
Oh.
The V8 juice is hot, and it is perfectly, it is not too hot.
Uh-huh.
And so you haven't gone too far for people that don't want a lot. You know, it's sort of, it's used in making
Bloody Marys.
Bloody Marys. I think it was invented to be a Bloody Mary mix. But, you know, a Bloody Mary is nothing more than gazpacho
with
vodka.
Yeah. Yes, because it does call for a cup and a half of tomato juice.
Yes, you need at least that. I put a lot more than that in it.
Well, this is only 6 servings.
Yes.
And it does say croutons or toasted bread cubes.
Yes, and also in some Spain. Okay, Spain is where gazpacho comes from.
That's what I thought.
All of a sudden, that is clear to me because there is in Spain. However, they put bread in it. A lot of not this is not the Tuscan bread soup, but it is. It starts with a bread or a panade, which is dried bread that has been soaked in water and then squeezed the water out, and that becomes a thickener for the soup. Now I'm thinking about it, and then that mixes with the olive oil. So look in Spanish books because that's where it would be. But I put breadcrumbs in mine and thicken it a little bit.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it gives it a nice heft. And also in some parts of Spain, now that I'm located it in my mind again, ice cubes.
I was just going to tell that. It says to serve, add an ice cube to each serving.
Oh, 3 or 4 or 5.
I thought it'd be wonderful with the hot days coming.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I'm going to have it tomorrow night for supper, so I'll
we'll
be thinking
about
you.
Thank you much.
Yes.
All right, thank you for
Bye-bye.
The call. We have some other folks here ready to go. Let me just, we're already at the midpoint here. Let me reintroduce our guest. Yes, sir. Mid, Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. He stops by once a month. It's almost on the first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour. We talk about cooking. And this time around, we started out talking about corn, and that is our major topic. But You know, there's no rules here. If somebody wants to talk about something else, that's okay. But particularly, we're interested in maybe you have a good corn recipe that you'd like to share. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. On again to a caller in Champaign, line number two. Hello.
Yep.
Yes.
Hello. I have a recipe from my husband, who is was from Indonesia.
Yes.
And it is called satay jagung. You have heard about that?
No, I have not.
Those are corn fritters.
Oh.
And they are made with some, how do you call it, corn starch, a little garlic powder, then a little bitty of sambal ulek, what is red pepper paste.
Oh, the sambal, yes.
Yeah, sambal, an egg, and it is made with a little bit of soy sauce, and we put always a bouillon cube mashed in that, and you make the batter of this, and then you deep fry it in an iron, mostly I have an iron pot.
Yes.
And the things you can, when it comes, the oil have to be very hot, and when the cookies come to down, you can push it or separate it a little bit, and they come up, and it is a real nice recipe with Indonesian food.
Do you have a sauce that goes on that, or is there anything that
it's
spicy
like
enough?
A little pancake or a little fritter.
Yes.
And that goes with, if you make rice table or rijsttafel something. But it is one of the side dishes of it.
But it uses corn. That's very interesting.
Yes, corn, a little, I take one drained can of corn, and about, say, that's for one little thing, and say two a tablespoon of cornstarch,
yes.
A little bit of garlic powder. I put in some parsley stems and leaves, finely snipped. A little bitty of, I don't know, green onions, you call that? And
yes, spring onions or green onions, yes. Chopped green onions.
Very little bit of green onions, the tops of it. A little bit of tikkoman or soy sauce, a mashed bouillon cube, and you make a batter from that and put it in the hot corn oil or sunflower, whatever oil. And in, say, 2-3 minutes, the cookies are ready.
Now, those are rare. A corn fritter like that. That is another Pennsylvania Dutch standby, our corn fritters.
Oh.
And my mother made them like that, and we could never find a recipe until not too long ago. My brother did find a recipe for these. But corn fritters are a good old standby.
Yeah.
And what it does, it extends the use of the corn. You know?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
good. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yes.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Let us go again to another Champaign caller, and this is line number three.
Hi, Doyle. This is Joan from Seattle.
Yes. Hello.
I wanted to let people know about something I found, a series of historical cookbooks, and there's one on the Lewis and Clark expedition with a lot of parched corn recipes.
Oh, parched corn, yes.
The same kind of thing you were describing, but it was a major staple of their trip. And if people are interested in historical cooking and corn, that's a great place to go.
What's the name of the book series?
You know, I don't know. It's something like the Food Journals of Lewis and Clark. I think people could find it if they typed in food and Lewis and Clark or cookbook. Or
well, look, the Food Journals, that's good.
So.
Yes. Well, great.
And I wanted people to know that we, in the Northwest, sweet corn is almost unheard of. It's a great treasure of the Midwest, and people should enjoy it while they're here.
Well.
And while it's here.
We're going to have some tomorrow.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay, thank
yes.
you.
All right, thank you.
Lewis and Clark, because they, you know, that whole trek of Lewis and Clark, it was phenomenal. One person died, and it wasn't his fault, you know.
It was the guy, he had a burst appendix,
yes,
I think, and,
yes,
and they had no way to treat the man.
Yes,
but other than that, yes, all the guys who, except for that one, all the guys who started out, they all came home.
And the dog,
and the yes, and it belonged to which one of the guys?
I forget.
Lewis.
Yeah, I forget.
I think
it was
his. Yeah. Yes, I think it was his dog. Yes,
but that's just remarkable to go somewhere you have no idea where you're going, how you're getting there, or ever even getting back, or if you will. And then all the trials and tribulations they had. So I'll bet those food journals are worth paying attention to.
Well, and now here I am. I'm on my computer. And the title is as the caller suggests, there is a book here that's called The Food Journal of Lewis and Clark.
That sounds like it.
And the subtitle is Recipes for an Expedition. And the author is Mary Gunderson. And it looks like it is published by History Books. It's a good publisher, book list says just in time for the bicentennial celebration for the start of the famous expedition.
Mm-hmm.
The book comes out through a series of recipes supported by entries in the expedition's journal. Gunderson offers a unique view of the westward journey, beginning with a Jeffersonian dinner at the White House where French cooking was in sway. And Gunderson follows the party upriver as their stores begin to run out, and Lewis and Clark are gradually forced to live off the land and the kindness of its inhabitants. Culinary oddities such as portable soup, which I remember reading about, that sounds like it was pretty bad, and primitive wild game recipes support quotations from the duo's journals. Recipes are easy to follow, and anyone interested in historical cuisine can duplicate them, from sophisticated cooks to students looking for practical programs on the Lewis and Clark expedition and its era.
Sounds good.
So that's it. And it is indeed called The Food Journal of Lewis and Clark, Mary Gunderson. So if you're interested, I bet you'd be able to head down to the bookstore or possibly to the library and find it.
And find it. That's good. Well, thank you.
Urbana next, line number one. Hello.
Yes. Doyle, for the interest of having some fun this morning, your friend Christine Green shared with me a very rare album called the Philo Glee and Mandolin Society.
I know them very well.
Yes. And that's going to be aired on Uncle John Coleman's WEFT show 90.1 from 6:30 to 7 this evening.
Oh, this evening?
Yes.
6:30 to 7.
Yeah, 6:30 to 7, 90.1. The first half hour is old-timey, too. But,
yes.
Uncle John told me that he heard about this as a rumor out at the Old Time Music Festival in Clifftop, West Virginia. But nobody's...
How peculiar.
Nobody's seen it or heard of it. And
well, I'll have to tell you and those who are listening that I was on WEFT about 1965, playing it and some other music. Yes. Yes, that's a part of my life.
You were a part of this group?
I was part of well, yes.
he says somewhat hesitantly.
Well,
hesitantly.
I mean, yes, of course.
Yeah, okay.
The Philo Glee and Mandolin Society.
Yes, do you have a story about the University of Illinois Folk Song Club that you'd like to share with us? And I'll hang up and listen, Doyle.
Well, very, very quickly, it was I got interested in the music through the Folk Song Club, and two of my students, two of the first two sculpture majors that we had here at the university, and I got together and formed a little ensemble, and we played string music of the 1930s, and we had a lot of support technically on that. We had some of the best sources in America providing us with the 1932 records and such, and we began to play and sing and play and sing, and we were very popular with the Folk Song Club, and they decided to put out a recording. So I can say now from my last record, of course, it was my first record. It was 1962. But we enjoyed playing a lot, and people liked listening to us because we were pretty straightforward. And this interest, the interest in this music has reared its head again, and I had a recording left, and I gave that as a gift to the person you mentioned, and they're learning to play the same music now. So it keeps going. But that was 1962. That was when I was a little boy. Not quite. It was good.
Well, you never know what's going to happen on this show. If you want to talk about cooking, you can give us a call or anything else. That'd be okay, too. And we said at the beginning, we started out saying, well, we talk about corn. It's the time of year when there's good corn that's available. And as I said, you know, a lot of folks, they just want to dump it in a pot of boiling water, just enough to cook it. And just
do you put sugar in it?
Now, Mrs. Inge, now she's the one who's in charge of doing this, and I think she does. She does, and I think that there also was for a time we were going back and forth between also putting some lemon juice in the water, and I think we did for a while, and then I think we stopped. But I do indeed think that there is sugar in the water, and it just cooked barely, just barely. I think you just want to cook it just enough, which means
yes,
that
corn, you know, corn will get tough if you boil it too fast or if you boil it too long. It will get tough. So it wants to be done just à point.
But I'm gonna put it on the charcoal grill this summer. I'm going to do
that. Oh, you'll like it.
Keep talking
you'll
about
like
that.
It.
I'm going to do that. Let's see. Champagne is another caller right here. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hark back to the PGMS thing.
It's all right.
Live and well on the Welsh-English border.
Oh.
Your recording of that and also the all of the records of the Folk Song Club.
Yes.
And they are living with a former calligraphy student of yours.
Oh, all right.
Who is now a bookbinder in Hay on Wye.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I just thought you might like to be brought up to date.
Well, yes, I appreciate that. The reason I'm not going to be here in August is that I'm going to be doing a bookbinding workshop in California.
Oh, my.
So the beat goes on, doesn't it?
Well, it does seem to. This particular person now has a quartet.
Is that right?
And they play bluegrass
yes.
here and there and around, and they have a pick every once a month. At a pub not too far from where she's at.
Yes.
And it lives.
Well, that is great. Well, thank you very much for letting me in on that.
You're welcome.
Good, thank you.
Thanks for the call. One of these days we just might have to talk about this. maybe in the fall, maybe fun drive time, you know, we might do a little show. You might talk about cooking a little bit, and we might have to play a little music.
Well.
I think we may have a show here, Doyle.
We
may have to talk about that.
I have done about 3 or 4 hours of that music for WILL, but that was 27 years ago. Grace Babakanyan would have me on for an hour of playing auto harp and such. I've done it, been there, did that.
Well, but you know, every quarter century, maybe you should do that.
We can work on that. Yeah,
all right.
Sure.
So. Back to the subject that we started with. It seems like one of the things that now I see a lot of is involving corn is black bean and corn.
Black bean and corn, yes.
Mixed salsas, little things.
Yes.
And as little salads or as little condiments. And I wonder, is that an authentic Latin deal or is that something somebody just thought, well, it seems like a good idea. Why don't we... And it is fine. I mean,
In both cases, you're sort of right. It is roasted corn, black bean, and mango salad. Well, you see, that's all kind of a Latino series of tastes. However, I think, if you want to know what I think that the truth of the matter is, it is an evolution of the three bean salad.
Now, that's interesting.
Yeah,
really.
The three or five bean salad, which was German to begin with, long before anyone could even call it three bean salad. It was just a kidney bean salad or something like that. And then people started adding two or three different beans, and then it became famous as a three bean salad. You can now get it in delis and all sorts of things. But then all of a sudden, somebody put corn in it, and they did that in the South, in places like Southern Kentucky was the first place that I had a salad with fresh corn put in it. But all it was a three bean salad with corn added. Then the next thing you know is they took the big heavy kidney beans out, and they put in black beans, because only recently, by recently I mean 10, 12 years, you've been able to get those black turtle beans, and you didn't get them at one time. And in fact, Mexican cooking has sort of shifted over from pintos to black beans. Sort of, actually, that's what they originally probably were, was always black beans, but we didn't have them here, and so we had pintos instead. But now you get black beans. So if you've got black beans and you want a three-bean salad and you like the idea of corn, well, then there's only two more things to put in, some tomatoes and some peppers, and you've got then a Mexican taste or a Latin American taste. But I think that it all came because the sauces with it are exactly what you use in three-bean salad. That's just my opinion.
Well, no. Makes a good story. It seems to sort of make sense.
Well, I've watched it appear, and I keep thinking, what? You want to put corn? And then here's this one with mangoes. Well, then if you have dared to put in mangoes, why don't we put in some pineapple? Yeah. How about pineapple and peaches? Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so then you start mixing the fresh fruits with the other things, and then you find a new kind of a sauce that will go with that rather than vinegar and mustard. You know, you would sort of maybe push it to balsamic, and then maybe some raspberry vinegar and balsamic. And well, once you've done that, then you're pushing it in. I mean, so there's this great evolvement, but I think that what it is that you're asking came from three bean salad.
All right. Very good. Well, I like that story.
You heard it here.
Whether it's true or not, I like that story. It does make sense. I mean,
I've watched them appear, and they appear in that environment. I mean, it was never this is only done with a special kind of meat that you do. No. It was a buffet table in the southern part of Kentucky, and this lady was so pleased with her little salad and that had black beans. And then the Russians also make a legume kind of salad, but it's made with canned peas. It's all canned. Mm-hmm. Canned peas, canned black-eyed peas. So green peas, black-eyed peas, and maybe one kind of bean, and then some chopped crunchy things along. And that there is a Russian salad that's made that way. Mm-hmm. So all these things come together, and we've become so aware of a lot of it. And I think you just kind of pick up one and do something else with it. Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly you can make this thing with the black beans and the corn with canned corn. If you want to make it in January,
well,
you can
exactly.
go out and get good.
Exactly.
You can, the canned
niblets.
Corn is just fine. Get your niblets. Get your bushes, canned black beans.
Oh, yes.
And there you go. And I think that I think maybe everybody's had this and they're all saying, okay, Dave, this taste is over. But I think that
not at all.
To have that, and you have the sweet element in there. Maybe you could put a little heat in there. You put a little cilantro in there. And it's a really nice accompaniment.
Well, you see, what you're doing is exactly what I'm saying. You're modifying it to adapt to what you want at that moment. Not that. I don't like garbage cooking where you just do a lot of stuff and that. But you say, I kind of like to push it this way. And all of a sudden it takes on that particular character. But, yes, there it is. Let's talk to this person.
All right, we have a caller, Robinson, line number 4. Hello.
Doyle?
Yes.
This thing of putting mango in bean salad, are you sure they're not talking about the old-fashioned mango, which is a bell pepper.
I know what you're saying. No, you are from the South because you don't call them anything but mangoes in the South. That is the bell pepper. A mango bell pepper was the full name of that. No, this is fresh mango.
It's the tropical fruit.
The tropical fruit, yeah. A fresh mango.
Okay.
So that's what it is. But thank you for asking, because that is a puzzle with a lot of people, because everyone wants to just call it a green pepper. Of course, you wouldn't just call anything a green pepper if you were in New Mexico, because that's a totally different object. And to call it a bell mango is very, very Southern.
The word mango was used for bell pepper in Northern California.
Oh, Northern California?
In 1885.
Oh, well.
I saw it on a hotel menu.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, I guess they had some Southerners that got up there.
Sure they did. I'll hang up.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Yes, let's, mango bell pepper.
Let's go here. We have somebody on cell phone, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Speaking of mangoes, last year we were in Chicago, and I stopped in at the Devon Street area, which is an Indian neighborhood.
Oh, yes. I know it well. Yes.
And I called friends back here in Urbana, and I said, okay, what do I do now that I'm up here? And they said, buy mangoes. So I bought cases of mangoes. So they said, buy them hard or firm. And I had heard that there were different varieties of mangoes. Now, you don't usually see them labeled here in Mark grocery stores. But they were in the cases, and I looked at the boxes, and they had the ones that were available in June and July were called Kent mangoes.
Hmm.
And I've never had such good mangoes. They had no fiber in them. They melted in your mouth.
Oh, yes.
They were a gorgeous color, and they had lots of taste. And I was eating a mango a day. They were just so marvelous. And I haven't been up to Chicago to get my fix of mangoes.
Oh, dear.
They really are lovely.
Mangoes are grown in different parts of the world. We get a lot from Mexico and a lot from Hawaii.
I think these were from Mexico.
Well, at different times in the year, they'll come from different places. Yeah.
So if anybody is going up to Chicago and you're going to be in the area of the Indian market,
get on Devon Street and look for them, yes.
And the place that I found them was at Fresh Farms, I think, and they were just stacked up in cases along the outside of the grocery store. And
I am going to throw a bit of caution in there. Some people are allergic to mangoes.
They, my understanding is that they are actually related to poison ivy.
That's exactly the kind of stuff that they get. I mean, their lips swell up, some people are very allergic to it. Yes.
And my understanding also is that it's mainly in the skin, and so you shouldn't just bite into a mango and eat the skin. And it's more likely, I'm not positive here, don't quote me, but maybe in the green mangoes that they're. And anyway, peel them and enjoy eating.
And enjoy them, exactly. Oh, thank you very much.
All right.
And,
well, thanks, go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Go ahead. I'm going to get off now.
Okay.
Bye.
We have maybe a couple of minutes left. Someone wants to call real quick. 333-9455.
Or I want to tell you another dish that I'm going to make tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a dish that I learned in New Mexico, actually Cheyenne, Wyoming. New Mexico, calabacitas. And we can't get calabacitas here always. I have found them late in the season at the farmer's market. They're little round green squashes. But I'm going to make calabacitas with yellow crookneck squash and little baby courgettes. What it is a squash that you chop up fairly fine, dice fairly fine, and mix it with corn, and then add a green, there I am with that idea of green pepper, a sort of medium hot green pepper, and I like to buy the canned green peppers from Ortega and dump a couple of cans of those in. It's just the right amount of flavor. So green peppers, hot green peppers, corn, and squash, then is sort of sautéed and cooked down. No garlic, but you could put onions in it. And I would not add tomatoes to this. It wants to be a little bit drier, not quite as wet. But that's going to be another dish. I'm going to have two corn dishes tomorrow night.
Well, I guess. At that.
You mean the old clock on the wall is sing.
That's right. The farewell tune is starting to play. For this time around, we want to say thanks to our guest, Doyle Moore, for being here. We generally, throughout the year, have him here the first Wednesday of the month, 10 o'clock. We talk about cooking. We always have a good time. Now, but we will not see you in August.
Not in August.
But in September.
Going to run. I'll be back in September.
All right.
Try to remember that day in September.
Well,
et cetera, et cetera.
Talk about your old chestnuts. get some kind of food-related pun
in
there.
Isn't that fantastic?
That's the fantastics. Thank you very much. Doyle Moore, our chef in residence. See, now you've done it again.
Well,
I'm in a good mood now.
No one has as much fun as we do.
I'm in a good mood now.
Well, I am too.
All right. This program here on Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, the Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello. A program also made possible by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and the coffee bar. Coming up later today on the Afternoon Magazine, we'll hear about a unit of Marines given the assignment to race ahead of the American battle forces in Iraq. The unit, nicknamed 1st Suicide Battalion, saw heavy combat almost every day in the first several weeks of the war. Celeste Quinn today in the 1 o'clock hour talks with journalist Evan Wright. He was embedded with the group for 2 months. He's written a book about this titled Generation Kill, Devil Dogs, Iceman, Captain America, and the New Face of American War. You can hear that in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine today. In the next hour of this show, we will dip back into American history. We'll be talking about an event that probably a lot of people have not heard of. It is the story of America's largest labor uprising. It took place in 1921, and it's known as the Battle of Blair Mountain. We'll be talking with Robert Shogan. He's a retired journalist. He now teaches at Johns Hopkins University. He's written a book about this, and he will be our guest in the next part of Focus 580. So we hope that you can stick around. As usual, we will have some news for you at a minute past the hour. Before that, an update on the commodity markets.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
And with this update on the markets at 10:58, good morning, I'm Jay Pierce. Well, wheat is up 3.5 for July at 342 right now. The September wheat contract at 349.5 is up 4.75. July corn at 251.5 up 2. September 255.5 up 1.5. December corn at 260.75 up 2.25. And the March 2005 corn at 268.5 up 2.5. Soybeans way up. July up 42.5 now at 10.22 even. The August contract at 862 is up 42.5, and November soybeans at 679 up 27. Soybean meal for July up 27.30 at 372 even, and the soybean oil at 30 up 95. The feeder cattle for August 111.40 unchanged right now. The live cattle for